Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hello, everyone. It's the JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Sarah.
He's doing this now with the JVL. I thought it was a JVL.
Earlier in the day, the JVL felt a disturbance in the force. And then I realized that it was happening. I was being invoked to you, not by you, to you on Nicole Wallace's show.
This was a nightmare.
How was that for you?
I was doing Nicole, and I was on for the whole hour, and I was on with Heilman. And it was a perfectly normal show. And then we were talking about the Supreme Court and the 14th Amendment, which is the birthright citizenship. And I was feeling good because I had just read the clause off my phone on live television to be like, this is completely straightforward. Like, this is a constitutional question. It's not a public opinion question. It's not up for debate. And John Heilman goes, well, I had your colleague Jonathan V. Last on my podcast today, and he told me there's nothing the Supreme Court can do about it. And I just started laughing, and Nicole was like, what's happening? And I was like,
it was
okay,
amazing,
John,
TV.
You picked my bleakest colleague. and he literally was like, well, do you think JVL's right? And I was like, don't make a joke about JVL always being right. Like, we are not on The Bulwark right now. This is too in-group for television. But it was weird. Yes, you hung like a specter over the show.
Like,
I've heard
Tim,
some good things about that podcast you did with Heilman. I haven't listened to it myself yet.
Like the Holy Spirit. I'm like the Holy Spirit. I'm everywhere. The fruits of the Spirit descending upon my disciples, my friends, my colleagues. Tim, you'll get to talk eventually. But Sarah, you went and wrote a piece today, which you let Sam edit instead of me, because I like to be your editor. But that's okay. Would you like to tell the people about your little having to come out and put Elon Musk back in his place?
I mean, I'm not sure we got anybody back in their place, but I got to tell you, this guy has a lot of energy. Does ketamine give you energy?
No, it's a downer. It's a downer.
Okay, is that right?
Yeah.
Because he somehow is managing to dismantle multiple parts of our government, but also tweet totally made up conspiracy theories about Bill Kristol, and to a lesser degree me, even though it's actually not really Bill. I don't know. I'm like, but here's, let me just.
Do you know how many, just a quick fun fact, yeah. Do you know how many tweets he's tweeted in the last 24 hours? Any guess?
No, tell me.
Over 200.
So like, who, is it just these seven kids that are dismantling the government while he's tweeting?
I think he's multitasking. Sometimes I tweet while I pod. Keep an eye out for that. If you look at the timestamps, you might catch it. You'll know when I'm getting bored. But
you have to understand, he's not actually doing anything else. Like the you know, the dismantling of the government isn't a high intensity job. You just tell people go in there and smash shit. Yeah. Like it.
That's true.
You know,
I mean,
it's not,
I guess
like
you just write one
creating
post.
Cold fusion. Yeah.
You can write one post that you just copy and paste from the time you did it at Twitter.
Right.
It's like your services are no longer required. We're shutting you down. I guess you're right. It's not maybe not that labor intensive. But yeah. I the other day I like caught wind of this, and honestly, it had been going on. Like MAGA Twitter is such, even though now MAGA is basically all of Twitter, it's still the real like circles of conspiratorial machinations I'm still slightly isolated from. And so I think somebody flagged it for me that somebody had put together this, like, you know that meme from Always Sunny in Philadelphia where the guy is all the yarn and it's like all the things are connected and he's like smoking and losing his mind. And somebody had put together one of these charts that somehow had been like USAID gave money one time to, I believe, the Rockefeller Foundation, who then at some point in the past had given a grant to something called the Hopewell Fund. And an organization that Bill and I work on had received money from the Hopewell Foundation. Now, I know exactly where that money came from. Okay. So there is, it is a pooled fund. So like,
I assume Alex Soros and the deep state at USAID and a few, and maybe some Ugandan children. Did you take the money from some Ugandan children?
No. Like,
it was from Frazzledrip. All this money came from Frazzledrip.
No. Groups of donors who pooled a fund for democracy-related purposes, right, has nothing to do with these other places, granted money to us and for a project we were working on, okay? So, cool. But the idea that because USAID gave money to the Rockefeller Foundation or something, and that they, like, at some point had given money to this other place, that that meant Bill was taking money from USAID.
Millions.
It's like not even close to being true. But here's what's interesting about it is that Elon is currently dismantling a government that he clearly has zero idea of how it works. But like all of these people, and actually to be fair, it's like other weirdos posting these like made up things that are like charts and it goes here. Actually, one of the charts had where the money actually went then. Like it was to some organizations that we were granting to. It's like the money clearly didn't go to Bill Kristol. Like actually it was sort of solved in the first thing, but there's a whole bunch of gibberish out there. But Elon was like, so somebody's like, Bill Kristol's taking money from USAID. And Elon's like, not anymore. I'm like, what are you even talking about? And then he was doing things like responding to people with the scratching chin emoji, like, interesting. All of these charts connecting all of these things. But what was funny about today, so I responded, I usually let this stuff go, right? Because like there's so much dumb stuff out there, like Piero Midiar funds the Bulwark. No, he doesn't. Never did. Like, not a thing, right? People just make this stuff up on Twitter. And at some point, people would, like, decide it's true. And it's like, do you run this all down? And do you try to explain, like, right now in my comments, because I wrote this piece being like, here's how it actually works. This is not true. It's a complete lie. It's a completely made up. And I've got all these people in my replies being like, well, show me the receipts. And I'm like, for what? A transaction that didn't occur? What receipts do you want for me to demonstrate that this is, like, made up and a lie? There's no receipts. It's not a thing. It's not real. But it has like 40,000 likes or shares or something on Twitter by people who are like, Bill Kristol should be locked up in the gulag for taking taxpayer money. And I'm just like, this is how this is going to go, I guess. It's just going to be completely made up nonsense. I thought it would take them longer to kind of come for us, actually. Like, I knew anybody who's critical of them, they would come for. But, like, it feels like it happened. I mean, I don't know. It's only been 2 weeks, and, like, they got a lot of government to dismantle.
Can I just throw one wrinkle? You left. There's a lot there. I would just like to make one very brief point, and you can keep explaining. There is somebody in this whole conversation that takes money from USAID.
Oh, yeah, and that's Elon.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is just...
Scratching chin emoji.
Every accusation is a confession, or we're just in 1984. You can use whatever cliche you want, but like it's all just it's just like a bunch of freaks on the internet, like shouting Bill Kristol with the extra parentheses, you know, around it to denote that he's Jewish. You know, is like taking money. Bill Kristol's taking money. We've got to stop it. But it's like, well, no, Elon has been the one that's taking government money, actually. A lot of government money. And now he's in charge of the money. So, like, you know, if you're going to be Charlie with the yarn on the wall, I'd probably be monitoring where the person who now has read-only access to the Treasury Department, where that money is going with regards to him and his competitors. It might be something.
We're
going
to get to read-only at some point. But that is a thing for which I would like to see some receipts, actually. Okay. Like, just some claims of, don't worry, he only has read-only access. Really? I'd like to see the screenshot from the admin dashboard showing what Elon... That's all, you know, that's all I want. Every one of these things has an admin dashboard where you can see the permissions for all of the users. I would like to see the screenshot of that. Okay. Well, anything else? Tim, would you like to say anything about Bill Kristol's millions of dollars that he stole from USAID?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the relevant thing to say here is that like besides like these people are like insane and lunatics and like there's no rationalizing with them. So like I appreciate that Sarah wrote the article and it's out there so you can send it to a friend if they have concerns, but like the facts aren't really, I think, gonna be the thing that the scales aren't gonna fall from the eyes of Banshee MAGA 69, I don't think. over after Sarah's article.
Cat turtles like my bad. I'm so sorry.
But I think that it is relevant just in like the move fast and break things element of like what the of like what we're dealing with here, right? Which is that they actually don't care. It is all in group out group stuff. They just want to, and they don't care if there's collateral damage. And so this is true about accusations about USAID funding, if it's Bill Kristol or if it's the Lutherans that get collateral damage because they happen to be doing some work that's in immigration. Sorry, Lutherans, like whatever, we got to shut you down. There are pedophiles there now, I guess. I don't know, whatever Elon has to come up with. But it's true everywhere, right? It's like the DEI firings. Like, we're just going to fire anybody that feels like they have a DEI job. And if it's a couple of you have real jobs, like Tough Brit, you know, whatever, we don't care. Like, it's the FBI thing. That's what they tried to do at the FBI, that this acting FBI director has actually done a good job standing in the breach of, at least until we hear from what happens with Cash. But, like, if you're on, you know, like, there was some reporting about FBI agents, I think it was Ken Delanian, who were, like, Republicans, that were, like, kind of just tangentially on one of the investigations into Trump, like weren't like the key investigator, and they were like, you're gonna get fired, and they're like, why? Well, I love Mr. Trump,
I'm one of the good people.
Yeah, so you hate
don't
to see
send
that.
Me that's to a, the camps I'm on your side.
That's a tough break. But like this a lot of this, it's like gonna be hard to unwrap. Like the advantage,
I have to interrupt him. Have none of these people seen the death of Stalin? Do they not understand how purges work? That
yes,
when
correct.
There's a purge, lots and lots of people, even people who are actually totally loyal to Stalin, get thrown into the gulag anyway.
Correct.
They're shocked.
Not seeing death of Stalin.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So no, all I'm saying is, I guess I really don't know if this is a useful observation as far as counteracting what is happening, but like they're just gonna go break shit up, and like it's gonna take a long time to like do the unravel. And like this is what like flusters me, and I know we'll talk later about the Democrats, about the question of like being like it's time to be strategic about what to push back on with them. And it's like, no, like there needs to be a speed as a counteracting force as well. In the way that Sarah showed some speed in writing her fact check today. Like, that has to be replicated across all of these things, because, you know, I think there was a guy in the Time story about Elon, who is an agency official who is on background, and they're like, he's going to totally have have rolled up the entire government by the time that Congress and the courts get out of bed, you know? And like, I think that to me is what is like the big takeaway here from Kristol Ghazi.
Yeah. You know, and just on some of the stuff that he's been doing, you know, you guys saw this New York Times report today where they're just sending classified information in like nothing. It's just like over email. It's like easy to access. They made it public in a way where like it's easy for the Chinese to figure out who the CIA agents are. And they're like stunning.
I love how you're just rolling over that. You know, we just accidentally outed a few of our CIA guys to the Chinese. That's just a minor story for today. Anyway, sorry, continue.
It's not a minor story to me, but it's the kind of thing where like I was on Nicole, there was a congressman on, and he was like, you know, kind of giving it the, this is not good. You know, this is compromising information and it didn't need to happen this way. There are easy ways to, and I was like, guys, they're like, literally, I don't know if you remember, but in 2016, we had one of the candidates and she had a server. And I don't know how many hours Fox News burned on the specific ways in which she dealt with her server and their entire theory of the case about why she was unfit to be the commander-in-chief was because she was potentially putting national secrets at risk by mishandling classified information. These guys are just, like, casually outing CIA agents. And, like, Democrats need to be able to be like, this is making you, the American people, unsafe. And not just to anybody, to the Chinese. Like, did we care about China? I was pretty sure we cared about China. I'm pretty sure that Donald Trump said he was going to do something about China. I'm also pretty sure that they said national security was important. I mean, I'm also sure he left all of those documents he stole in his bathroom for 2 years. But it just feels like Democrats should put the pants on and, like, get moving on this stuff, because it is crazy and you should be screaming and yelling about it. And I think everybody's like, well, everybody hates the government and Trump's done such a good job of making the CIA the enemy and whatever. Like, well, then don't talk about the CIA agents. Talk about you, the American person, who the one of the few things you want the government to do is, like, keep us safe from foreign enemies. And they're just, like, making all of our stuff public.
Yeah. Well, one other thought on this, though, just on the politics of this, is that if we've learned anything from the last two decades, it's that doing stuff is not popular. I know that it's going to go against some people's ethos.
You and I talked about this the other day, didn't we, Tim? Yeah, it was such a profound point. I hadn't really thought about it.
Doing stuff ain't popular. Like, it's been a while since a president has done stuff and, like, gotten a lot of credit for it. Like, doing big things. Action is popular. Trump waving his hands, being like, we got the Canadians. I got one over the Canadians. That's popular. But actually doing things that impact people, not really, not popular. Obamacare, like, you just go through, you can go down the whole list. Like, eventually some of it ends up being popular, but people don't like change. So Trump, like, the Elon approach is different to the Trump approach. And I think that's why you're already seeing, like, his numbers become worse than Trump's. And I think his numbers are going to be worse than Trump's, because he's doing things that some category of people won't like. Right. Like, there's, you know, not every person is going to care about what's happening in each of these various agencies. But, like, all of the Elon action, I think, has a lot of people like, whoa, I don't know. I kind of liked the fake trade war where we owned the Mounties. You know, like, that was great. Like, we threatened a trade war. We cucked Canada. Nothing happened. People like that, you know. Like, dismantling the entire government and having a South African billionaire having Trump be in charge of Medicaid, that's making a few people, I think, a little nervous, you know. And you can't see it in Elon's numbers, and so there's something to that, I think.
Well, okay, so I'm just going to reorganize the show on the fly here, here anyway. Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I wanted to propose to you guys. So what I think of as an analytical mistake on my part, which is that while we were in the interregnum,
I'm listening.
I have your attention. Right.
Yeah, tell me more.
While we were in the interregnum, I believed that the Elon stuff would be vaporware, that Elon was going to be in charge of this. His Doge was a blue ribbon commission where he would be running around Washington trying to feel important and all the doors would be closed in his face. And that the danger would be like, well, what is Trump going to be doing? Is he going to be doing mass deportations or whatever? And instead, we've gotten the opposite. We got the tariff thing, which was obvious bullshit the whole time. We'll talk more about what Wall Street thought about that later on. There's a great story. I want to read this to you. In Colorado a few days ago, big tweets and video of perp walk, because they got one. They went out, the DEA and ICE, and they got themselves a bad Venezuelan who was a member of Tren de Aragua, which is a Venezuelan gang, and he was attempting to kidnap, and it was
water?
Not agua, Aragua. Anyway, locally reported
it
3 hours
means
ago.
Like, it actually means like testicle cutting.
Okay, kings are not funny, so I don't know what it's
about. Headline: after publicized arrest of suspected Venezuelan gang member, case is closed and he walks out of jail. The DEA in Colorado shared a video of a suspected Tren de Aragua gang member being arrested in Aurora. About a week later, prosecutors declined to press charges. Wah, wah. And that is kind of what we've gotten from Trump, whereas the Elon stuff has absolutely not been vaporware. Like, Elon is actually in there with a hammer vandalizing the Museum of America, the federal government, right? He's just running around spray painting paintings and banging up sculptures. And that is not what I expected. I was incorrect about that. Do you guys have thoughts?
I'm happy when you're incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, but it's a good observation about a way you were incorrect. I'm going to take this opportunity to say a thing I was correct about, which is, I've talked about some of the scenario plannings, right? There's always like groups doing scenario plannings, and I played Trump in one of the big scenario planning exercises, and I went in there with a plan, and my plan was I came in with hundreds of tweets pre-written, and I just kept posting them in the chat because you were allowed to tweet in the chat, right? And then over here, I was issuing executive orders to dismantle the government. But, and so like, I always thought that was like roughly what was going to happen. What I did not anticipate is that actually Trump would be like, no, I'm going to sit over here and tweet. And I'm going to say fun things like, we're going to invade Panama. We're going to invade
Greenland.
We're taking over Canada. We're taking over Greenland.
First state.
We're taking over Panama. And now we're going to take over Gaza too. Okay, so
Don't mess up my show map.
I'm just saying there's like all these things that he's going to do that are like preposterous and not going to happen. Like Canada's not going to become the 51st state. I'm relatively confident on that. However, he's got Elon. Like he doesn't have to do them both. And he doesn't have to like issue orders. He doesn't have to know anything about the government. He's got Elon just walking in and being like, we're shutting this thing down, guys. And when I thought they were going to dismantle the government, I did think they would do like pieces of it. I don't know. And look, I've never been like the biggest fan of the federal government. I think there's some paring back that could be done. I think there's some spending that could be reined in. And so like, I was actually kind of prepared for them to do some things that I was like, yeah, it's not the worst idea.
Yeah, same. Just, like, I was like, thank God that didn't happen. I was like, I don't want to have to hand it to Elon. Yeah. I was a little nervous about that. I was like, one of these days I might have to hand it to Elon on the pod.
You do not have to hand it to Elon now.
Which is nice.
Because the way he is doing this is preposterous and illegal.
Yeah. Well, the illegal thing, there's one more thing. And I was just on a panel here, so I'm in this hotel room instead of with my beautiful pinto beans. I kind of blurted this out loud, and then I was like, do I really think that? And I thought about it, I was like, I do kind of think that. And I'm taking us to the dark place right now. I think that the Elon behavior has me increasing my risk worry about like worst case scenario stuff. Mm-hmm. The Elon, and I assume JD is there at some level. Like, Elon is executing that JD podcast clip about, yep, like, we're just going to go break the law and you guys kind of figure it out. Like, good luck, nerds. And like, you and the Supreme Court can send the marshal to arrest me if they need to. Like, that's like basically what they're doing. I mean, and just if you just think back to the first term, like, Trump wanted to do a bunch of legal shit, and they did some EOs that were legal, but like you kind of had somebody like Don McGahn in the room all the time. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Just like saying, a normal lawyer. Yeah, like, yeah, you can't do that one. Sorry. I don't get the sense that there's anybody like that in the room with Elon. I don't think that there, like the only time I've heard the word lawyer come up in conversation with Doge was in the article today where they're like, we've had a briefing with the lawyers and we want you to stop slacking.
Right, slack is foyable.
Yeah, slack is foyable. Right. Like, so the only thing I've heard so far with the lawyer being mentioned, maybe I've missed in one of the articles, but is like them using the lawyers to figure out how they cannot, you know, publicize things that should be publicized by law. So I like that, just that whole mindset just has me thinking, like, man, I don't know. Like, if that is where this thing is going, it's hard to see Trump or, you know, being the restraining force at any point, right? And we will really be reliant on the courts being the restraining force and then Elon and Trump abiding by it. And I guess I've turned up the doomsday clock. What's the doomsday clock is now at 11:57 for me when it comes to that. And it hasn't happened yet, but it's just something I was thinking about with the Elon.
So I think that's right. It turns out to have actually been quite smart and clever of Trump to outsource the destruction of the government to Elon, who is not like, so if he had outsourced it to Russ Vogt, then yeah. it would have been on Trump because nobody knows who Russ Vogt is. It mm-hmm. would have been like, you know, Trump's guy, Russ Vogt. But it's all on Elon. Elon's popularity can go down. What does Trump care about that? Elon has his own independent sort of power base, and he just lets Elon go and break everything. And I think that that was clever. It's also, again, super duper illegal. And nobody, can I just say, nobody actually understands what this is. So Carolyn Leavitt said the other day that she was pressed on this. She said, no, he's a special government employee, I think is the term of art. And she said that that's true. Do we know that that's true? Have they provided a copy of the executed employment agreement, the contract between him and the government showing that this? Because, like, again, she went and also then said the day
getting
after,
hired for
like,
the
they
government,
aren't breaking any laws. Like,
yeah,
you can't
just put a finer point on that.
It.
Though, like, getting hired to the government is a huge pain in the ass. If you know anybody that's done
well,
right,
so
like
there are waivers for special government employees, and one of the conditions then is you can only work for 130 days in any 365 day period. And like, okay, so is somebody keeping a time clock? Is that by hours, right? Is it, or is it like, are there timesheets involved in this? Like, what?
Well, he's working weekends, I'll tell you that.
Right, but what I'm trying to get at is that I am not entirely, I'm simply not willing to take Carolyn Leavitt's word for it that he is actually a government employee. Like, this could all be being run the way the mafia is, where it's all done like by voice with nothing in writing, no records. And where you have this guy just walking into buildings and saying, I have authority here. Do this thing I'm telling you to do. It's insane. And once we're here, I don't think there is any going back.
And it must be menacing enough that there's things coming out. Like, people are saying they came in and we tried not to give them access to things and they made us.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. I feel like we should be getting more color at this point. They fired a gajillion people, and those people are too afraid somehow to go out and speak against him. Like, we're not seeing...
They do things like lock out people out of their workplaces. They're like, you know, we're coming in for the weekend. Everybody else who works here is locked out and can't come into the office for 3 days. Yeah. Like, they did this with one of the agents. They're like,
well,
nobody's coming in on Monday.
All over TV.
Well, a lot of this stuff is up in the air, though, right? Like,
because nobody knows what's true or real.
Right. I don't know. They might be able to get their job back. They've got lawyers that are telling them, like, we don't, like, that was illegal what he did. You know what I mean? Like, I don't. And there haven't been a bajillion people fired. There have been, like, a couple dozen people, which is a lot, at DOJ and FBI, like, taken out. And then there's been a lot of people that are being told that they're being fired. And then there's all the USAID people. So I guess once you start adding up all of those people, but like, and the other, and then there's people that are like saying you could resign if you want, you know, with the fake buyout. So, you know, so like, it's just, there's a lot of, a lot of balls in the air.
But none of this is in
writing. There's a lot of employees that you think could go in front of a camera. Or even, I'm not even seeing a lot of people who are part of these agencies, like, who are, like, politicals from the last administration who 3 weeks ago were in those jobs on TV talking about it.
So Anne Applebaum talked about
this. I've seen a couple of the inspectors general.
This is intentionally being done under cover of night. Which is another thing that is like what you get in the Eastern European republics as things were going south for them. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, the other thing, like I talked about this with Applebaum on Tuesday, is there's the Ed Martin element of this, the DC attorney, right? Who like put out a press release that's like, I'm investigating the people that are blocking Elon from getting access to stuff.
And the people who are trying to name the names of Elon's
workers.
It's like
that also, I think, kind of speaks to your question about, like, some, you know what I mean? If you're one of those people, obviously, at this point, you're like, you need to be very careful about what you're going to start saying publicly. And there's other categories of people that probably could be out talking more. But like the Ed Martin, but now, you know, knowing that they will have overtly political district attorneys. And this is like the kind of niche stuff that like it's hard. I feel like it's kind of hard to explain to people, but it's like, this is like not how shit works, right? Like I keep bringing up the Alberto Gonzalez thing because like we had an attorney general had to resign because he fired people because he wanted U.S. attorneys to act in a more political fashion. And he thought that some of them were acting against the political interests of the Bush administration. He had to resign over this scandal. Like Trump has put in a U.S. attorney in D.C. in the central spot, who's just like, YOLO, I'm investigating anybody who's me. Like he replied to somebody on Twitter that was like, I'm gonna look into Will Stancil. Do you know that annoying lib Will Stancil? Like Will Stancil tweeted about how Elon was a Nazi, and like Fartmuncher 22 quote tweeted this, tagged Eagle Ed Martin and said, this seems like a threat on Elon, and Ed Martin said, I'm looking into it. Like, so like that is, it's like, that is also like another layer to this that is different.
On that point, they just outed all these CIA agents and put their lives at risk. And but like, you name the people who are actively dismantling the government on Elon's behalf, like Big Balls 42 or whatever that guy is, like you put their names in, Elon's like, you're being prosecuted. You're breaking the law. Like,
this is treason. Yeah. Maybe people out there, normies, civilians, don't understand is that up until 5 minutes ago, the way the federal government worked is that everything is done in writing and everything has a paper trail, and it is done in like for many reasons. There are national security reasons. There are CYA reasons. And this is, you know, people want to have get out of jail free cards so that if they are, you know, if they are doing something that they think might be sketchy, They have a long string of papers showing them why they were doing it, because this person X told me to do it, and then person Y told person X, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like all of this is being done again, like Stringer Bell, don't take notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy. It is just Musk and Trump said something to one another, and then I guess Musk is doing DMs with people. I mean, again, nobody needs to hear me say this, but if you are a person who uses Twitter direct messages for anything, Elon Musk has access to all of that. Why would you do that?
Well, I guess Elon can see my very friendly DMs with my new friend Ben Stiller. Anyway, we have some other topics we have to get to, I think.
Yeah, there's we got other news. Stuff.
Wait, did we? This is the one last thing on this, though. You know, they're out there accusing everybody of taking this USAID money. Ben Stiller got accused of taking USAID money. Yeah. Politico got accused of taking US. And guess what? In Politico's case, it was a bunch of USAID employees who paid for Politico Pro. Okay. In Ben Stiller's case, he paid his own way to Ukraine, and they were like, no, US. Like, they're just making all this stuff up because they don't know how it works. And then they keep trying to tell you, no, you're laundering money and you think we don't know how it works. And you're like, okay.
Is it wrong that I'm happy that the government's not paying for Politico Pro anymore? Is it wrong that I'd be happy about that? Okay. Just aside.
Right. Well, you know what? Again,
overall,
we're gonna
totally agree. Just on that one little one.
The new McCrispy strip is here. Dip approved by ketchup, tangy barbecue, honey mustard, Sprite, McFlurry, Big Mac sauce, double dipped in buffalo and ranch, more ranch, and creamy chili McCrispy strip dip. Now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey, Mama, you don't have time to be messing around endlessly scrolling to find a caregiver for your child. Let me clue you in to my trick to save time and my sanity when finding a sitter. SitterCity.com. SitterCity knows what they're doing. They've been helping busy parents find the perfect sitter for over 20 years. While other sites overwhelm you by throwing hundreds of random profiles your way, SitterCity matches you with caregivers who actually fit your needs. No endless scrolling, no guesswork. I love that all caregivers undergo ID verification. They have background checks, specialized qualifications, and real parent reviews to know if they showed up on time or really know how to handle my sassy toddler. And if I need help, I can talk to a real live human, not a robot, with SitterCity's delightful team. You know, my employer pays for me to get SitterCity completely free as part of my benefits. Yours could too. SitterCity is my go-to for a smarter, simpler way to find reliable, trustworthy care. Don't wait. Go to SitterCity.com/XX and get the help you need.
All right. Well, I want to go to something else then. I want to talk a little bit about William Cohen from Puck has a piece that dropped right before we came out. And that's okay. I'm going to read to you guys. What he did is he talked to a whole bunch of Wall Street guys to try to understand where they are on the Trump stuff. And the answer is they're all quite happy right now. The tariff thing, none of them took it seriously. They all say that tariffs are ridiculous and that Trump is an idiot for being so obsessed with them. And that voters, but they say consumers, but consumers are idiots for not understanding how tariffs would affect them. But because they knew Trump would never actually do it, they didn't really care. And here is...
Trump did do the 10% tariff on China, just throwing that out there. That thing, okay. That did happen.
Okay. Here is one of them explaining to William Cohen anonymously why he went Trump as opposed to Kamala Harris. To me, it was a prisoner's dilemma. We had an anti-business Biden opportunity or a pro-business Trump who may put tariffs on or may not. But if he puts them on and he realizes they're bad, he may take them off within 24 hours. So they said, we'd rather deal with Donald Trump because he'll take our phone calls and we can tell him how bad these are, whereas Joe Biden won't take our phone calls. Corporate America felt like we could sway Trump. We could get to him and convince him that the tariffs were wrong.
That's not a prisoner's dilemma. Just by the way, that person doesn't know what a prisoner's dilemma is, but that's just a quick.
Do you think it's the same banker who was pumped that he was allowed to say again? I bet this is the same guy.
I think that there are a lot of these fucking guys.
I'm just going to read Bill Cohen here. In fact, other than blanket pardons for the January 6th offenders and the press conference where Trump blamed the fatal helicopter jet collision on DEI, the donor class on Wall Street is generally happy with Trump too, according to this banker. A reality that much of the media still refuses to comprehend. Here's the quote. There are very good reasons to criticize DEI, but in this context, it's a little insane, he said, referring to Trump's post-crash commentary. On the other hand, he continued, quote, everyone is thrilled, end quote, that the, quote, apple cart at USAID is getting turned over and that people are seeing who is getting paid for what from Treasury. Sort of all that Doge stuff, he said. Which Wall Street types are giving a standing ovation. That's a direct quote. So if you believe this, the Wall Street types think that Musk running around destabilizing the payment system for the U.S. Treasury, which could create, I don't know, economic instability, harm, they think it's great. And they're super pumped about the DEI stuff because the people at Goldman, God knows. I mean, their whole lives must be spent worrying about DEI and, you know, Goldman's famous big parties about inclusion. They don't even care about making money at Goldman anymore, is what I hear. All they care about is the cuck stuff.
I fucking hate these people so much. Just a few things. I fucking hate these people so much. Like, these are the worst fucking people. And I hope that their investment fund crashes. I'm pulling for a crash for their fund in particular, not for, hopefully we can isolate that, sever that somehow. The S&P 500. I'm just going to pull this up. Under random Biden. Date here.
Please January do it because 22, I can sense Biden was good for business.
January 22, 2021. So 2 days after Biden takes office, 3,841. The S&P 500 on November whatever, 8th, right after the election, 5,900. And it was
that
up.
That seems like its graph go up.
Like it almost doubled. It almost doubled during the Biden administration. The graph is just
to the moon.
Going up.
Rocket ship emoji.
Like these guys all did fine. These guys all did great.
They did amazing.
Like the risk side of this, there are plenty of things to criticize the Biden administration about, you know, particularly if you have specific knowledge about a specific industry, there's probably some regulation that you hate or some person in the government that was really annoying or stupid or even harmful to the business on balance. I that's all fine. But like the economy got better. There was stability. Like there was no risk that Kamala is going to come in with her, you know, corporate lawyer husband and corporate lawyer brother and be like some socialist attack on businesses. Like the risk is so, like these guys are like, oh, we knew he'd back down on the trade stuff. You did? Are you sure? Are you sure that 81-year-old Trump's going to back down on the tariff stuff? Are you sure? Are you sure that Justin Trudeau could have decided he wanted to butch up and said, like, let's do it. Let's have the trade war. Like, don't fucking know. Yeah, these guys don't know. And, like, the downside risk of, like, the collapse of the rules-based Western world order. They're not calculating that into their fake prisoner's dilemma. They don't know what a prisoner's dilemma is. Maybe they should actually read, like, Wikipedia that.
But put democracy out of the side. Just purely on economics. Where is there more risk? There's more risk once you start monkeying with Treasury and you have a guy who says he's going to go to war with the Fed over interest rates. And I just... Sarah, please defend capitalism.
Well, this isn't capitalism, right? Like, this isn't, no. So one of the things that interesting about the tariffs is, like, a lot of people made a lot of money betting on Trump's pulling back the tariffs, right? They shorted that stuff and they made a ton of money because they're like, you know what? He's not going to want to do this. It's really unpopular and everybody's going to blink. And he did. And in fact, and he just claimed a victory. We didn't even talk about this. He claimed a victory by saying Canada agreed to do something it agreed to do during the Biden administration. Like, the press release they put out, the things they agreed to do, the money they agreed to spend, all done during the Biden administration.
Not the fentanyl czar. We got a czar out of it.
Oh, we got a fentanyl czar. Now that I know we got a fentanyl czar, Trump, art of the deal. Best negotiator ever. 16-dimensional chess. Can we just... Capitalism is like the free exchange of goods, okay? That's not.
Is it?
It's not. This is not what this is. This is robber baron crap.
I don't know.
And it's,
man,
also just short-sighted guys, and it's people that are like, you know, whatever, like, going to make decisions based on what the next earnings report is going to look like and all this stuff. I just fundamentally think it's a bad bet. My point. I feel these guys are morally repulsive, and like their quotes are like asinine and infuriating, and I would like rather just, I don't know, what's something that sounds very unappealing, like rip my toenails off one at a time than go to a dinner and sit at a dinner at some douchey steakhouse in New York with these people. So they're awful. But like, you just put all that aside, I just straight up don't agree with the bet. Like, maybe it'll pay off. We don't know what the future holds. Maybe in 2028, Donald Trump will leave and the S&P 500 will be at 12,000 and he'll cut rid of all the red tape and the rule of law will hold. And it seems like a really risky fucking bet to me.
Well, let me read one more piece. Last thing from William Cohen. Given the largely foreseeable chaos of the past few weeks, was there anything else that motivated the Wall Street donor class to lean so heavily into Trump last November, I wondered? Here's the quote. They don't think being rich is enough, one of my sources told me. They think they need to be venerated for being rich, and Biden didn't venerate them for being rich. Boom. Roasted.
You know, here's the thing. I'm gonna give you a slightly contrary thing on this.
Okay.
That you won't like, maybe. I think there's some weird truth to this. So I'm watching the Dems now. You know, they want to kind of be like, well, we want to go after these billionaires. Billionaires are unpopular. I actually don't think that's true. I think that part of Trump's appeal and part of Elon's appeal, these guys, is people are like, I want to be rich too. I think these rich guys are cool. I think it's cool. I think billionaires seem like they're smart, seem like they know stuff. And I think, like, watching these idiots, you know, try to respond who, like, don't understand anything and they want to sound smart and they're like, okay, but if money comes in here, like, they assume Elon is smarter about stuff than everybody else. And that's how he made all of his money. And so I just... this, like, we're going to go to war against the billionaire class. I feel like that's kind of like a go-to move on Dem's part. And I feel like the culture's not really with them on that.
That's entirely possible. I'm open to that possibility.
I'm also open to it. I'm open to the totally to the, like, I'm a, I guess
I'm open to the
opposite. Just in full candor here, I'm exploring. I'm interested. I'm listening to the different things. Like, you could tell me that the path to victory is by getting a Luigi tattoo on your back and talking about, you know, burning oh, down the billionaire class. Or you could tell me that that's not right at all and that the Democrats really need somebody that speaks to everybody's aspirations and is like, actually, these Trump and these guys are clowns and they're not going to help you get rich. I am, like, or anywhere in between. I really don't know.
Well, part of it is that, and here's the thing. I think people have this outmoded sense where they're like, but Romney, you know, Romney was a rich guy and nobody liked him. Romney's the kind of rich people don't like, right? There's this new class of billionaire bros that are accessible to people. And, you know, I was talking about this when I was recording the focus group pod, where people were into Mark Cuban, right? I was like talking to Dems and they're all like very into Mark Cuban, and part of it is that he's wealthy and he's a business guy and he's on TV, and like a lot of the things that we sort of assume actually people might not like, I'm not sure about that.
I would caution
people like stupid shit. I totally agree with that. We're aligned on this. I might be disconnected from what people like, for sure.
Before we move on, I again, totally open to this possibility, but I would say we haven't had a concerted effort to demonize billionaires. And
I don't think that's true. That was all Bernie Sanders. That was like his whole thing. There's been class warfare.
It worked pretty well. A lot of those Bernie voters became Trump voters. I'm just saying
that they clearly didn't mind the billionaire part at all.
Well, I mean, they did and they didn't, right? I mean, they hate the elite. I'm just saying that I think somebody who really wants to try to make billionaires be a thing. People didn't used to hate immigrants.
I think
until somebody decided they were going
to
really make immigrants a thing.
I think you want people to hate Elon. I think think like billionaires as a class. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know.
You got to freeze it and personalize it, right? This is the Alinsky rules.
I might have said this a while ago, too, but I just don't agree with it now. I listened to people like, but why would black men like Trump? And I'm like, they see him as aspirational. They talk about, like, he's rich. I want to be rich, too. Same with Elon. Same with
But what you'd have to do is you'd have to make Elon the face of all billionaires. You know, like this is, you have to make him the stand in for it. Okay. I want to do like an hour on the Trump Gaza thing, but we'll save that for dessert because it's going to be so delicious and not at all nutritious.
Well, we've already been at this for 45 minutes. Do
I
want to do it? Do we have like other topics?
Barry, I have one other topic. You know, I'm a professional host here, Sarah. I know how to run a show. Politico ran a big piece about Democrats this week. And I just wanted to let the two of you guys just dunk all over it.
I just can't.
Who wants to go first?
I'm so annoyed with.
Set up the piece.
I'm so annoyed at the Democratic strategists that talked to Politico for this. The headline is Democrats are falling for Trump and Musk's foreign aid trap. Veteran strategists want their party to be more thoughtful about fighting Trump's anti-bureaucracy campaign. Among the quotes is one from Rahm, who I usually agree with Rahm. I like Rahm. He says this: you don't fight every fight, you don't swing at every pitch. And while my view is, while I care about the USAID as a former ambassador, that's not the hill I'm gonna die on. I you just see a lot of this out there right now about the Dems being strategic. And you also hear this, like, don't fall in Trump's trap. Like, Trump's trying to distract you. Trump's trying to do this. And I just, like, people who, and maybe it would include some of us and some of our listeners, who, like, follow politics, like, in the way that people follow sports, have, like, now, I think, have had their brains broken a little bit by, like, the notion that everything that, like, happens and everything that every politician says, like, is going on a scoreboard somewhere. And it's like, we got one point today, or we did this. We said this thing, and it backfired and helped Trump, and Trump got 3 points today. And I want to encourage everybody, unless you're Abigail Spanberger or one of the people running for New Jersey governor, like, there are no points on the scoreboards this year. Like, you can do stuff that would hurt the Democratic brand. Democrats could go out and say really stupid things. You know, like, there could be a video of the Democrat 2028 nominee doing an interview where they're like, I think the government should pay for sex changes for illegal immigrant criminals in jail. Like, that would not be helpful. Like, you can do things that are unhelpful in the long term. But, like, being righteously angry about something and going after Trump on it and trying to raise the salience of these issues, like, at this time, is not ever a bad idea. Like, it just isn't. Like, right now, it's the Dems' job to check Trump, to attack Trump, and to challenge Trump. That's it. They're the opposition party. That is their political job and responsibility. And, like, USAID deserves to be fought for. It does. And it does not hurt the Democrats for there to be people speaking out on behalf of the children that are going to die because we shut down USAID, or speaking out on behalf of America and our role in the world as a values-based leader, which I guess we're just going to twilight without a fight, apparently. So it is worth fighting about that. It's worth fighting about immigrants. It's worth fighting about trans people in the military. As long as they're fighting and they're pushing back, they're not doing this, you know, stupid Democrat navel-gazing stuff, and, like, they're punching him, that's good. That's good. Challenge him, sue him, raise salient issues. And, like, in fucking June of 2026, you can decide, okay, maybe our strategy should be to really focus on healthcare or whatever. The fact that we're shutting down these community health centers or Medicaid, or who the hell knows what other atrocity will happen between now and next year. Like, you do not have to be like, every tweet a Democrat sends attacking Trump does not have to be tailored and message pointed to, like, whatever polls and focus groups the best. Just, like, start throwing shit and see what sticks. Like, there's this notion that Trump was so, like, so strategic. Go look at Trump's fucking bleats. Like, Trump attacks everybody. Attacks people's face. He attacks the things that backfire. He attacks on stupid issues. Like, just try to challenge him. Try to weaken him. That's the job.
Tim, I don't want to depress you, but we have literally probably 120 crazy Trump stories between now and June of 2026.
Yeah, at least.
Like, if you just do the rate at which they come out and the number of days.
There's no way you could possibly know. Just forget, even forget Trump. So even many. Forget Trump. If this you were in February 2021 and you were the Democrats, you didn't know that Roe was going to happen. You didn't know what the main issue was going to be in the 2022 election. Like, you didn't know. In 2017, Democrats attacked the Muslim ban right away. The same article could be written about that. It could be a bunch of strategists are like, I don't know, guys. You know who's not very sympathetic? Terrorist-loving Muslims from Kazakhstan. Maybe we should just let this one, maybe we should let this pitch go by. No, like, Democrats attacked it. People protest it. That didn't end up being the salient issue That time moves fast. That didn't end up being the salient issue by 2018.
I don't think I agree with you.
I know you don't. And I don't. And it's the number one thing that I disagree with you on, and several other people on my podcast that I like. I need to send a warning sign for guests before they come on, which is like, I don't want anybody even talking on my podcast about, like, what do you think voters in Michigan think about this? I don't care. I don't care right now.
So I read that Politico piece, and, you know, it's Rahm, it's Axelrod. And I read it and I was like, you know, at some point, like, I was like, I'm not sure actually this is even the right thing to be punching at Democrats about. Like, I was like, what the DNC did over the weekend was one of the most insane things I've ever seen. The idea that that is going to be the alternative to what Trump is offering, you know, I just think there's a lot of voters who are going to take a pass on that, whatever that was. Okay. That being said, I do think Democrats need to figure out what is both in line with their values and popular. Like, I'm sorry. I would not pick a fight on trans military service. I would not pick a fight on, Democrats, we've talked about this, but there's a line that Ezra Klein has that I think is really, really deeply correct, which is that Trump won the culture by a much larger margin than he won the vote. And I think on some of this culture stuff, Dems are going to have to let it go. And obviously I think that trans people should be allowed in the military, but like dying on that hill right now, like making that the issue.
That's not dying on the hill to go out there and say, actually, I think that brave trans soldiers should be able to stay in the military and they shouldn't be kicked out by a draft dodger who pretended to have bone spurs. I don't think that's dying on the hill. That's not the only thing you have to say. As we mentioned, Elon tweets 200 times a day. If you're a Democratic senator, you could tweet 50 times in a day. And one of them, you could have 10 press conferences a week. One of them could have been about the trans military thing. Like, why is it dying on the hill?
That's a fair point, actually, that it's like, yeah, it doesn't have to be the only thing. I do think Democrats tend to go for those issues and make them the issue.
Sure.
As opposed to, I think there does need to be an offense strategy. They should be screaming and yelling. But like, I do watch them sort of do things like they all went and stood outside of USAID. Like the USAID, people have no idea what this is. Right. Like, and so Democrats being like, we're going to go to bat for USAID or we're going to go bat for a particular department. Like, no, that to me is not the way to fight. The way to fight is to scream and yell and be like, the American people did not elect Elon Musk. What he is doing is illegal. And he is shutting down whole sections of the government without thinking through any of it. And they are incompetent and they're leaking CIA people's names and they are putting us all at risk. Like, there's a way to go on offense in ways that I think track with what people are like. Yeah, I'm not sure this is great, but like defending different parts of the government that people have no idea what they do. Like if people don't know what they do, they don't care about them. And now is not the time to educate the public on what USAID does. Now, I do think like getting some of the families in front of it to be like, we just moved, uprooted our entire life to move there to help save, Sudanese babies and do, vaccines for whatever. And like getting them in front of people to tell the real stories, that's a good idea. But I don't think that like, I think it is fair to say, don't swing at every pitch and that some of this stuff is meant to distract and to trap Democrats into going to bat for things that are deeply unpopular and just reaffirm for people that these people are out of touch. And I think they've got to figure out what issues matter to them and then they need to go on offense about them.
Yeah, I just have one area of disagreement on this, which will summarize where we have a different POV. And it's possible I'm wrong about this. We'll see. We have to know. I just think that in this media environment, what the strategists in that article are calling for and what a lot of Democrats are calling for right now is like, we need to really have a strategic, targeted approach that goes after him and like brings in a broad coalition and is not reflexively opposed and like learns some lessons from 2020. And I'm like, no, my lesson from 2024 and 2016 is the Democrats do not need a tailored strategic message. They need animal. Like I want fucking, like, I think that the next Democratic leader needs to be somebody that is exactly what the pundits tell you you shouldn't do, which is be a totally rabid anti-Trump rage monster that goes after every pitch and goes after him relentlessly and is unapologetic about it and does not give a single centimeter. And I think that is probably... the
voters
best
do like dominance. Voters do respond to dominance.
I think you can do that without getting trapped into unpopular positions and without taking on things that like are the terrain that Republicans want to fight on.
Sure.
Fair enough. All right. Now we get the dessert.
Great.
On Tuesday evening, Donald Trump made some new U.S. policy by saying that we were going to take over Gaza and develop it and turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East. Since then, some of the cucks in the administration have tried to walk that back. Marco Rubio said that the president was merely talking about rebuilding. Steve Witkoff, Trump's Middle East envoy, went in front of Republican senators and said that Trump was absolutely not going to spend a single dollar on rebuilding Gaza. Slightly contradictory walkbacks.
That's because we're making money. It's not good. We're making cash.
Hi, Carolyn.
Think about the rent we're charging.
Carolyn Leavitt said that that Trump has not yet decided to put boots on the ground. I guess that's a thing that maybe I have so many thoughts about this.
I
would like to hear yours first.
No, I want to hear yours.
Yeah, no, you've been waiting for this. You said you did a lot of research. Let's hear it.
So this is bait. This is the type of stuff that I have been desperately trying to avoid writing about in my promise to myself that I'm not going to write about the meaningless shit that Trump says, but I do get to talk about it here. And so it's obvious we are not going to move 2 million people who currently live in Gaza to countries which refuse absolutely to take them. And we wouldn't do it even if Egypt and Jordan did agree to take them, because that would be a nightmare logistically. Gaza is not going to become the Riviera in the Middle East. That's not a thing.
Maybe you're just kind of putting ceilings on our aspirations, JVL.
I
don't know. Why not? I want to see it.
Here's all I care about. Here's all I care about. I want to read this. A statement from Leila Elabed, the co-chair of the Uncommitted Movement. Remember them? I feel sad, angry, and scared for our communities. For months, we warned about the dangers of Trump at home and abroad, but our calls largely went unheard. Harris left a vacuum by not visiting Michigan families impacted by U.S.-supplied bombs to help create a permission structure for their trust, while Trump visited Dearborn and filled a community in despair with lies. Trump's illegal calls for ethnic cleansing are horrific, but as on so many other issues, Democrats had a chance to persuade voters they were a better alternative, and they blew it. Again, the woman saying this was part of a movement to convince people to not support Harris. And so for her to then say, really, it's on Harris. She didn't, come. I don't want to say what I would like Layla to do, but it involves a Falcon Heavy. I would like her to get on a Falcon Heavy to the sun. And with her, I would like to send, do you guys remember Bashar Ababa?
I don't.
He was the gentleman who was interviewed by Isaac Chotiner in The New Yorker.
Oh, yeah.
Over the summer.
Yeah, I read that.
He's the Palestinian American who founded Arab Americans for Trump. Big Trumper. And the interview, we should put this in the show notes. The interview he did with Isaac Chotiner is unbelievable.
That's really good.
In the level of, I guess, self-deception from this guy talking about how great Trump was and how way better than Biden Trump was. And, Chotiner asked him, he says, in the presidential debate, which was less than 2 months ago, Trump said during an exchange about the war in Gaza that Biden had, quote, become like a Palestinian. Baba says, yeah, I know that statement very well. Isaac says to him, how do you understand that statement? He says, well, from my perspective, I'm a Palestinian American. The way you would see it was clearly as a slur in a derogatory manner. However, it was later explained to us that he meant to say Hamas. Hmm. And this guy just accepts it. So what does Bashar Ababa say about the plan to do some light ethnic cleansing and then redevelop Gaza into Sandals Resort for Trump properties? Last night, he changed the name of his group from Arab Americans for Trump to Arab Americans for Peace. Mm. And the statement said, we appreciate the president's offer to clean and rebuild Gaza, but take issue with the president's suggestion of taking over Gaza and removing its Palestinian inhabitants. It was just a suggestion. He was just floating the idea. And these aren't people with a historic right to their homeland. They are just Palestinian inhabitants. I just, these fucking people, you know what? And this is, again, political capital. I would not expend a single ounce of blood. I would not move the little knuckle on my little finger to do anything. You know what? This is the world they wanted. Enjoy it. Democrats should spend precisely zero effort on this. Just say, well, I guess we're going to have casinos in Gaza. Great. Let's see it happen.
I would like to see it. I think this is back to the JVL thing of like, why aren't you doing this? Let's see it. Let's do it. Let's see the effort here. I do think that there are, some of our old neocon friends were a little titillated by this suggestion. I saw some conversations over in Beacon and Commentary World where they're like, might be something here. Ben Shapiro too.
Yeah.
They might greet us as liberators.
This is a great idea. Then shouldn't they be upset when he doesn't do it?
Just a little democracy promotion.
This is what I don't understand. This is what I just don't understand. If this is a good idea and it's not insanity, then surely they'll be upset if it doesn't happen, right?
I would think so.
Right?
Well, yeah, sure. I don't know. I don't think so, but you would want them to be sad. I do wonder, it's hard for me to get inside the mind of a, you know, random Hezbollah member. So this might be wrong, but just as like human instinct, I would think that there actually is some tangible negative to this for us. Like, wouldn't you think that like some of the terrorists would be like, all right, USA, you want to come in here and turn our ancestral homeland into a gaudy casino? We have a few thoughts
flesh
about
pot.
That.
One of your decadent flesh pots.
Flesh pots of fucking sex and drugs where women show off their ankles. I don't know. It seems like it might make them mad, and that like, and that there might be some targeting of U.S. interests and assets over this.
Also,
maybe not,
seems
maybe
like
not,
the kind
maybe,
of thing that helps with recruiting for Islamist terrorists, right?
I mean,
the U.S. president say that he wants to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip seems like the kind of thing that you could tell impressionable young teenagers.
Maybe the terrorists take Trump seriously, but not literally, though. You know,
I think you guys are being too negative about this. I think you should give this guy a Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay? Trump?
Give
only
him a Nobel
if he does
Peace
it.
Prize.
He only
has
if he does
solved...
It.
He has caused peace in the Middle East. He's going to build some high rises. Here's the thing about the stuff like this. I actually have a lot of thoughts, but one of the first is Donald Trump's pitch to his supporters that everybody said they were for, literally embedded in America First, is the idea that we are non-interventionist. We are not going to just do adventurism abroad. We're going to go tell people in other countries, we got stuff here to do at home. I don't know if you know this, but I hear voters say this all the time about why they voted for Trump. We got to take care of our own. We got to do stuff here.
Oh, so they want to spend more on social service programs?
So to watch a bunch of MAGA idiots be like, yes, we need to, this is, we got to invade Canada and Greenland and the Panama Canal, and we got to build the Gaza high rises. And what's great about Trump's speech when he's doing it in Susie Wiles' eyes, watching him do it, I enjoy that. I enjoy watching bad people who put Trump in this position suffer as they see like what the kind of stuff he's doing. But like, this is literally the opposite of what he pitched.
And yet his people love it. Right?
It's almost like there's not a commitment to any particular worldview.
Though I guess I would make this though goes back to the actual actions, and so this is why it's like, yeah, Trump do it, because I think that it is something that could
we
actually
do not want him to do it. There's like 100%. Real people who first of all legit.
I'm the
right.
Joker.
I said this on TV.
You want to know how I got these scars?
A way to do that. What do you, I mean, that is us. We would have to. I don't know. I don't. Would we kill people? What would we do to just move everybody?
I don't know. I'm excited to find out.
No.
That's what my point is, right? Like, okay. So he keeps getting rid of us, but who cares? It doesn't matter what we wish.
Right. Because
our wishes don't matter.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah, our wishes don't matter. My point is, if he actually did it, all right, I do think that that would be something that would have negative impact on him, actually, with his own people, right? Like, if there were actually people,
right?
Because you think about what he explained.
Has a positive impact.
He was like, "We're going to go through. There are a bunch of bombs that have been unexploded. We're going to do whatever controlled detonations. Like having American troops over there doing controlled detonations in Gaza, while like who the hell knows? Like what? You know what I mean? Like it just would be such a shit show. That would negatively impact him." I think if he actually did it, I think that the America First people are that there is a this is a compliment I guess or just an observation. Like I think that they have a genuine commitment. They didn't like Iraq. They have a genuine commitment to not wanting to do this. They also like that Trump is like jingoistic and is going to like own the.
That's
own
what they
the
want.
Lit,
they
right.
want this stuff. They don't want the actual action.
Right.
They
exactly.
Really.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely do. I had a question for
you guys.
Sorry,
Sarah. Were you going to do something else?
Sorry,
on this?
Sarah. Keep going.
No, I mean, this is.
So here's my question.
Ridiculous.
So to go back to the tariffs. Why did Justin Trudeau keep kayfabe on this? So if you run Canada, and Trump is doing this nonsense, and Trump's people are coming to you on the side and saying, "Just give us anything that we can spin as it being a victory for him," you've got the entire country on your side in Canada. They were Canadians, the politest people on God's green earth, were booing the Star Spangled Banner at hockey games, which I find amazing. That's how angry they were. They pulled stuff off pulled American liquor off the shelves and all across the country. They have like rising nationalism in Canada for 3 days. Why not for Justin Trudeau to say, "Fuck you. I'm not going to participate this. You want to try putting on tariffs? Go ahead."
Because the consequences are going to be really bad for Canada. And the that's just the reality.
They'd be
like,
worse
the
for
economic No, I don't think so, actually. The economic consequences for Canada are going to be really bad. Like, so that's the answer.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, Trudeau's on his way out. Fuck it. If you keep rolling over for the bully, he's going to keep shaking you down.
No, he got the best of both worlds. He got to look really butch on his way out, standing up to Trump, giving that speech. Why would our friends do this? And then, like, his people know that he didn't give anything up.
Yeah.
Like, anybody with a brain can be like, this is not a real deal. It just so happens that there's, like, 70 million Americans who,
want this for you, JVL. I get it. I want it for me too. I want Justin Trudeau. If I was Justin Trudeau's constituent,
damn right, I want it for me. What other reason is there to want anything?
Yeah, I would be demanding that he hold the line. But you know, I'm not a whatever lumberjack in Calgary.
Listen, I have a slight complaint about the show right now. We're in its 70th minute or getting close to its 80th. And the topics were none of them are built for the thing, like my rant that I'm really upset about right now.
Okay, great. Why don't you close us down?
He uses the cold open.
No. It can just be the end. It can just be the end.
Okay.
But here's the thing that I'm watching, we're not getting to this, but like Cassidy, like all the Republicans who caved on
we didn't even
RFK,
get to that.
It's like, it wasn't one of our talks, but I have a thing to say about it, which is, many people are giving this excuse of like, Trump has a mandate. He won the election and the popular vote. Is there a limiting principle on that? Like, is there, like, at what point, like, what could Trump do that the Republican response would be like, you know what? That's too far. That's
literally nothing.
Is there literally, because I got to tell you, these voters, okay, much like they're the people who are screaming at Bill Kristol for not actually getting USAID money, but are ignoring that Elon Musk did get USAID money. These are also the America's a Republic, not a democracy people. Okay. And part of what they mean by that, right, their point is that they're taking a very sort of political science-y, originalist approach to the idea that we don't just, you know, might doesn't make right, you know? You can't have the tyranny of the majority, right? It's good. That's founder stuff. I agree. No tyranny of the majority. These are people right now who are just full-on tyranny of the majority, folks. Everybody's just like, nope, might makes right. He got 1 million more votes. And therefore didn't break 50% of the country. But you know, million more votes.
Smaller vote margin than Hillary Clinton, actually.
Smaller vote margin than when Joe Biden beat him in 2020. So, but that gives him what? Blanket? He can do anything? Yes. I just want to know what the limiting principle is from these Republicans.
None.
I would also like to know it. But not really expecting to see it.
Okay, well, that's
my point. I mean, it is. Because your point, the other way of making that same point is, like, if you went to any of these people, Todd Young and Bill Cassidy, and was like, in October, and were like, hey, Trump's going to win. He's going to pick a Fox host to run the military. And, like, the Cash Patel to be in charge of the FBI and Tulsi and RFK. Like, what do you think? What do you think you're going to do? Like, I'm from the future. What do you think you're going to do? Like, Todd Young and these guys have been like, no. We'll talk them off that. That'll just be a plea. You know what I mean? Like, they would have thought that they had a limiting principle, is, I guess, my point. And right. The revealed principle is that there is no limit. Yes. Limit does not exist, to borrow from, like, Katie Herron. Like,
if Trump, he's going to pull people out of, we're going to build a Riviera in Gaza. Are the Republicans going to be like, cool?
Yeah.
Are we going to invade Canada? Are they going to be like, well, we've gone this far?
I think yes.
It's good to know.
Well, that's a heck of a show. We go long when we tape at night. We got to stay during the day. We can keep it to a tight.
We don't have any other meetings or anything.
90 minutes.
I do.
I gotta watch Slow Horses and go to bed.
I got to go to a dinner. I'm on the West Coast. I've got a dinner here. I got to get to.
Well, I got to prepare for the next snowstorm because that's happening tonight up here in New York City. It's great. All right, guys, awesome news. We only have another 49 weeks of this in this year of the Trump administration.
It's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks, 3 days?
I did this on the Monday show. I was like, man, it has been the longest 3 weeks ever. And I was like, wait, no, it's only been 2 weeks, actually. It's such a long 2 weeks. It's been the longest 3 weeks ever. So, yeah, here we are. All right. That's good.
It's great.
I'll see you guys soon. Looking good.